originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat He's Had Enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I would like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206. Also, to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal. I'm sitting here in our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio, and I would like to remind everyone that a portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to former riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. Please, if you're able to help, visit their website at www.pdjf.org. So the name of the show is Jock Talk. Well, my guest tonight is not a jockey, but he still rides some of the best horses in the world. He's been galloping for Tom Pletcher for 10 years, and most recently, he's been galloping the Kentucky Derby winner Always Dreaming, and he's had a huge part in that horse's success. It's a pleasure to introduce my very good friend, Nick Bush. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thank you, thank you.
So great to have you here on the show, Nick. I have not seen you in a very, very long time. We used to work together back in the day for Todd at Palm Meadows. That was a long time ago.
We sure did. We had a lot of fun.
Yes.
I miss you.
I miss you guys. And I tell you what, Nick, you helped me so much in those early days. I was green as grass, and I would like to have this opportunity to thank you for all of your help showing me the ropes.
No problem. Anytime, I'm always willing to help, you know.
And just so many good memories from back in the day, Nick. And I would love to hear your story here. All of our listeners would love to hear your story, how you first got involved in this great sport of horse racing, and take us back to the beginning, Nick.
Okay, well, you know, I'm from a family of horsemen, generation after generation, going back to like the early days, like the early 1900s, I think. Of I can trace it back to my grandfather's, that, you know, basically worked with on the farm, and my father take me to the farm all the time when I was a kid, you know, and it's something that grew on me. You know, I mean, I loved that, you know, the farm life. It just took over me, like, at a young age. Basically, when I was a kid, probably about, so I'd say about 4 or 5, we lived on farms and stuff, and my dad used to always work on a farm as a groom. And his father was a groom, and my great-grandfather was a groom, and his father was a groom. So those are a lot, you know, far back, you know, long ways. Yeah, my dad used to take me to the farm, and, like, you know, and just basically teach me and to let me follow him around and watch him with the horses when I was, when I was a really small kid. And it grew on me, and I basically used to, you know, go with him every weekend, every time I could out of school. And so, like, when I was 12 or 13, I started working on the weekends, you know, doing, like, you know, easy stuff, not too much, because I didn't know too much about horses. And, you know, I started working on the farm and helping them, and, you know, making, like, $50 every weekend, nothing serious, just, you know, as a kid. And till I was about 12 or 13, I think it was, and I was working on the farm, and I know Bryce was coming to do a lot of mares, that, to trim a bunch of mares that that we had on the farm, and basically he was asking me, he said, we all, you know, he was always talking to us and helping us out. He's talking to me, he's like, what are you going to do when you get out of hospital? And I was like, you know, I'm not sure. I really have no clue. And, you know, I'm not sure. I was always too small to be, too short to be a basketball player, and too small really to play football, my favorite sport. So, you know, and I was just like, you know, not really into the doctor, lawyer thing right then and there. And he was like, you should try to ride. And I was like, really? He was like, yeah, you're the right size. I don't know if you're going to make a jock, but you will, you know, you're going to be the right size to ride, you know? And so he, you know, gave me a few names and a few people to, you know, to probably try to contact that I could, you know, hook me up on the weekends and, you know, hook up with and go to the training center out there on Paris Pike and learn how to basically, you know, get my foot in the door and learn how to ride. You know, I went to a few, I went to a guy named James Jack, I think, at first. He told me he was going to help me. And then I think I ended up going to a guy named Mark Talby that actually trained for the farm that I was working for. And he was, you know, on the weekends, and I would basically get on horses for him, and he would show me the ropes. And then I ended up going from him to another guy on the other side of the shed named Donald Hughes. And he had a rider over there named Terry that was from Ireland that, you know, didn't teach me how to ride, but basically helped me. And once I got, you know, because I was at that point, I was green, but I could get around the track. And he would give me pointers, and he would help me out a lot. And he would basically tell me what not to do, what to do, and get my feet right, and tell me how to sit back on a tough one, or, you know, just basically get myself together, which was great, you know, to have somebody like him, you know, teach you. And from then on, I went, you know, to a few different freelance jobs. I think that I ended up going to Keeneland at, like, this is when I was out of high school. I think I was doing this basically on the weekends and every, you know, holidays, and every day I would get out of school or whatever in the summer. But following my graduation in 2004, I started riding full-time after graduation. I started riding full-time, and I went from Keeneland to I ended up going to Keeneland for a trainer, and I got noticed by another big trainer over there, and he's like, you ever been to Saratoga? And I said, well, one of his riders, as a matter of fact, for John Wood, his rider name was Danny Ramsey, asked me, he said, have you ever been to Saratoga? I said, no. He said, do you want to go? I was like, the guy that was walking with me that worked for the stable that I was working for, he told me, he's like, man, I would do it. And I was like, well, you know, that's a racetrack. I was like, yeah, I might probably should do it. So he told me to come and talk to him, and I was like, okay. So I went over there and talked to him, and, you know, they gave me all the details about what would be going on and everything, and basically, you know, in 2 weeks they'd be going. So I went over there, and they gave me, you know, everything that was going on, and put me on a van, and I shipped to Saratoga for the first year. And from there, I stayed with that job for 3 or 4 months, and that didn't work out. So I ended up, they had really nice horses, too. I think they won the Derby in 01 with Monarchos. They had so many nice horses, which was a good job, you know, to get my foot in the door and to get noticed. So in 2006, I traveled to Saratoga with them, and it was for 3 months, I think it was, that I stayed with them. And then, basically, I think after that, it didn't work out, so I went to Patrick Biancone, a French trainer, and he had a lot of horses, and I knew he would, you know, he trains in Kentucky, so he would basically, we go on back home after the meet, so I felt comfortable there, and he had a lot of riders, a lot of horses, and you know, he helped me out a lot. Basically, I would ride in a big, long line of riders of mostly the French guys, and basically watch them, and that's where I learned how to use a long rein on horses and to sit, you know, get my feet a little bit better. I basically follow. We have like a big line of five horses, five lengths in between each other, and we'd go around the track. And I stayed with them for a year, and in Keeneland in 2006, 2007, I think it was. We went from Saratoga, we went back to Keeneland, and then I think we went back to Saratoga, and I ended up going to work for Guido for 2 weeks. And then after that, that didn't work out, so I was jobless in Saratoga. I went walking around and looking for a job. 2 weeks, I think it was right around the Traverse time, and Seth Benzel was an assistant for Todd Petcher at the time, and he asked me, basically saw me walk around and asked me, do I need a job? And one of his riders didn't show up, so he hired me. I walked over there and got started getting on horses, and I got hired. He was like, I was like, what's going on? What do you do from here? And he was like, we're going to Florida or whatever. And I didn't know that at that winter he was going to be going out on his own. And he ended up going out on his own, so he had hired me. But I had ended up staying with Pletcher, and he was out on his own. So I ended up going to Florida with Todd, which was a great move, I think, on my career part, because my career took off after that. I mean, it was slow. It wasn't like that it was an overnight success. You know, I had to put my time in, and I had to, show Todd that I worked hard, and year after year, I traveled, was there day after day. I'm trying to make the best of myself, make the best of the job, and it wasn't hard. I mean, it wasn't easy, you know. You know, everybody think, oh, you can just, you know, you're going to go to the top. No, you got to be basically, you got to put your time in, and you got to, you know, show that you want, you know, that hard work pays off. And I think that's what I did. You know, I've traveled around, I made sacrifices. The thing about this job is you travel around a lot, and you're not with your family, you're by yourself, and you miss a lot of home time, or you know, a lot of it's a different lifestyle basically. And so I basically grew up the tide. I was like 19 when I started, or 20 when I started, and I think I remember turning 21, and now I'm 30. You know, it's like I basically grew up. I didn't go to college after high school, so you know, I basically grew up and got my professionalism, I'd say, from Todd, which was good because, you know, it's a great job, and Todd is a great person to look after. So that was a great move. And that was 2006, 2007 I started for Todd. And through those years, you know, I was really green for the first couple of years, you know. And, you know, we still had a lot of good horses. I sat on a lot of good horses from day one, which is a good thing about working here. I thank my parents, my dad for putting me, for teaching me this job, as a matter of fact, you know, and for taking me out and making me, my love for this game true, you know, by showing me taking me out every weekend and, when I was out of school, and just, you know, teaching me everything about the horse that I could learn, and which is great. I'm glad it happened. I've been going strong ever since 2007 with Todd, and it's just an amazing job. Year after year, we get good horses, and you get used to different horses, and you see different horses run, and it's just amazing. We won the Derby back in 2010 or something, and we won it this year. You know, those are two races that I grew up watching, the Kentucky Derby. Those two races that I've always wanted to watch, to be a part of an organization that actually has won it, has been a blessing. In 2007, 2008, In 2000, I think that's how I was started. I was traveling every year with Todd back and forth. I think in 2009, I stayed in Churchill, closer to home. He had a string there for, he kept a string at Churchill for a couple of years, and I would stay there. Sometimes it was closer to home, which was good for me, which I loved. And then I think the year after that, I went back to Saratoga and started traveling again. And, you know, I've been blessed with a lot of good horses. I think in 2013 was my first year trip to the Derby. I had Revolutionary, very nice horse. I had won the Louisiana Derby. That earlier that year, I was probably a heavy favorite for the Derby. I had that horse, Violence. It's now a stallion. It's a pretty nice stallion. He had won the Remsen, the Nashua, and he had won the, the Cash Cow Futurity in California. And he ended up getting hurt, and so Revolutionary came in to replace him. That was great, and I got to go to the Derby with him, and that was amazing because that was the first year, and I finished third, you know. So it was like big things to come from, you know, ever since that year, you know. It was like, you got to be patient. You know, that's racing hard, and I always wanted to win, and I said, I'm going to win that race one day. And I went in there this year with Battalion Runner, who was good but didn't work well before the race. And we had worked him, and Todd asked me how he worked him. I was like, this horse is not, it didn't work that good. And I, you know, my, you know, our thoughts about the Derby were down because, you know, he had enough points to get in, but he just wasn't working up to par. And we knew he was a very nice horse, so we thought we'd just give him time. And, you know, it kind of hurts to get to scratch out of the Derby. But then again, you want to go on a race like that 100%. You don't want to go in the Kentucky Derby 50% or, you know, 75%. Mm-hmm. You want to be the best you can be. So, you know, because that's the best race, and that's the race you need to be 100%. So basically, I got lucky. And, you know, basically this is a teamwork, team effort job. You know, everybody's... a lot of us get on a lot of different horses, and sometimes you get on somebody else's horse. And the girl that was galloping Always Dreaming this year before the Derby was having a little trouble with him, you know, and he's being different because in Florida he was one of the nicest, easiest horses to get along with. And she was having a little trouble getting along with him, you know, because the horses don't go to get different when they leave a track and come to Churchill Downs. Like, I guess they see the big grandstand or they see all the action, it's a lot more traffic. They actually think they're racing. So when you gallop there, it makes horses get a little tougher there because mm-hmm. they think it's race day every day because, you know, the setup, the surroundings, I guess. And she was galloping, and the horse basically was throwing his head up and trying to run off with her. And, you know, so Todd was, you know, so she, you know, she had told me, too, so, like, after Battalion War, she's like, don't go anywhere because you might have to get on this horse. So it's not like, you know, Todd made, you know, a split decision to put me on. It was, like, something that she suggested, too, which kudos to her because that's not hard, easy to do when you're on a Derby favorite. It's just, you know, admit that, you know, you're having trouble with him and, you know, one of the other riders like to get along with him and get him around there, which I'm a little heavier, maybe a little stronger than her. And you know, at a time like that, at a crucial point before the race, we didn't want to take any more chances by, you know, letting him run. So Todd not only switched riders to put me on, we also made an equipment change, was to draw range, you know, which helps keep his head down and you have more control, which is a rein I love for a tough horse or for, and, you know, a whole lot of people let them knock them, but until you ride them, until you understand the horse, you really shouldn't knock them, you know, because it's something that's a very good piece of equipment that helps you have control with the horse. And, you know, like I said, like maybe if I was to put a regular bridle on that horse, maybe he would have done the same thing with me. Who knows? But, you know, I think the draw range helps keep his head down. And you know, so going into that race, it was tough, you know, him not knowing the draw range, me not knowing him. So I was trying to get him used to the draw range and get used to him too. So it was kind of tough, and I had a lot of pressure on me. I was being watched every inch of the way, you know. And so for him to get up there, and we knew he was a nice horse, for him to get up there and win the Derby was a blessing, because, and it was amazing, because it was not only was it a sign, it was a, you know, a sign of hard work showing paying off, it was just a stress reliever, you know, like, okay, you know, all the pressure can come off, you guys got it done, you know, and it's a team effort, you know, it's a team effort around here, so it's not like, you know, I'm better than the next person or whatever, but it's just that, you know, sometimes different riders fit different horses, and you know, sometimes, you know, horses around that, you know, a big colt, 3-year-old colt around the Kentucky Derby, time they get strong and they get, you know, they need sometimes, you know, a little manhandling, you know, and which is, you know, it's good, and I'm glad we got the team we got to be able to switch up a little bit. But so we won the Derby, which was a very big achievement for me, because I feel like that was a dream. That was a dream come true, basically because as a kid watching the race, you know, you grew up wanting to win a race like that. I always wanted to be a jockey, but I was jockeyed late as a junior or senior in high school, you know. And nobody really set me down to tell me, okay, you're going to have to watch your weight because you're going to be too big. And I was always, you know, too confident, saying, I'll be okay. I'll be able to lose if I get over. No, it's not that easy. It's not that easy whatsoever. And, you know, it's just a, you know, it's a hard lifestyle. And, you know, to ride races, it's really tough, you know, if you're not the natural weight. I think you would know that, as you being a former jockey.
No, I do. It's not fun.
You know, it's tough. That's always what I wanted to do, but the weight didn't work out. So, you know, I was always told, like, by other bosses that, you know, we should go try to be like a main breeze rider for like one of these big stables. And you know, it's not as dangerous as being a jockey, but, you know, you'll get to ride some of the big horses, and, you know, you get to be on like on them, and, you know, you like to still been around racing, which was great, you know. I mean, I still have an itch to ride races sometimes, but, you know, riding, I don't know if I was a jockey, I would have been able to ride for some of the horses that I have as a exercise rider, because I don't know if I would have been that good, you know. But other than that, and like, it was a dream come true winning the Derby. I wish we could have went on to win the Preakness, but you know, that's tough to do in 2 weeks as a general, and to win a big race like that, you know, it's a lot of horses balanced. That's the reason why there's only been 13 Triple Crown winners, I'd say, because it's just tough. But the Derby was right. It was good enough. For, you know, it was a big accomplishment, and to be a part of that is a blessing. It's amazing. You know, like I said, it was a dream come true. As a kid, that's a race I always wanted to win. Being a part of that, having your name on that is amazing, and it's a great feeling. I wish every rider could feel that and could experience that, because it's unreal.
Yeah, Nick. Like, you have to be just so incredibly proud of your big part in this horse's success. I want to ask you, so the first time you galloped that horse, that was literally, what, like Derby week?
That was Derby week. That was the Monday before the Kentucky Derby, as a matter of fact, yeah.
And that was the first time you ever sat on the back of that horse?
The first time I ever
sat on him. And that's a lot of pressure.
It was a lot of pressure because I knew his. I was watching him all week, and I knew what his antics was. And I was using draw reins, and draw reins are very hard to steer with. You kind of got to sit there. And Churchill Downs has a lot of traffic, and I was, you know, it was just a lot of things going through my mind. You know, like, okay, is there going to be any traffic? Am I going to be able to keep him relaxed around there? Everybody's watching me, is he going to relax the drawings? Is he going to take to the drawings? And it was just so much. And, you know, actually at Churchill, he relaxed, and, you know, when we the first day on him, we backed him up and we turned around. He kind of threw his head a couple times because he wasn't sure. Like, it's like somebody putting you, making you keep your head down. He's like, what's going on? Why is my head locked down? And he didn't know, so he kind of threw his head up a few days. But the second day was good. Third day was good. You know, he was starting to get used to him. So, you know, he started to pick it up the fourth day, you know, fifth day. And then, I think by the sixth day, we jogged him. And then on the fifth day, then we jogged him. And then it was a derby. But, yeah, it was difficult. I mean, you know, you're on that track and you're thinking there's a million things going through your head. Oh, what if he runs off? What if he throws his head up? What if he, what if somebody passes you? What if, and you want to do the best job you can do because you've been put in that situation. You know, it's like Todd said, it's like going into the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl as a quarterback, and not knowing your team that good because you're a backup, you know what I'm saying? And, like, having to take over the show, you know, it's
all of a sudden, just like, here you go.
Yeah.
And what did you say to Todd when he first came up to you and he said, listen, I think we need to make a change. I think you need to start getting on this horse. What was your first reaction? Did you just say, okay? Or what did you ask him?
Yeah, he told me when he came in, what happened was his secretary came up to me. She says, Nikki, do you have drawings on you? And they know me as a drawing guy for a road, and she wished I ride a few horses that use drawings, and I really like them. And it's a ring that I get along with and I like, you know. And I was like, yeah. And she was like, okay. And so the end of the morning, Todd was like, I was walking in the office to put my radio away. He says, Nick, I think I'm going to try you tomorrow with drawings on that Always Dreaming. And I was like, okay. And he was like, I think I want to try to start him off easy and slow him down a little bit. And I was like, all right. And I said, okay. And I was like, okay, you want to slow him down a little bit and start him off easy? And he was like, yeah, and I was like, okay. I was excited, nervous, and a little worried, you know. And me and Adele had an understanding, you know. Everybody that week was mad comment. Like, I got a lot of people got mad at me because they was like, oh, you know, how you just. But what they don't understand, it was. She had some. It was something that she had suggested. It wasn't like Todd come up to me. No, it was something that she had suggested too. Like, if you wanted to try somebody else, so she basically suggested to Todd 2 days before it happened that he gave her an extra chance to try to get it, straight, And
like you said, Nick, it's a team effort. Let's take a quick break. Stay with us, folks. You're listening to Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Pena, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network. But the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Despite finishing second in the Preakness, Julian Leperoux still had a solid week, highlighted by a victory in the Grade 2 Dixie aboard World Approval. Leperoux finished in the money on 50% of his mounts with 2 wins, 2 seconds, and 1 third-place finish. Jose Ortiz enjoyed success on his trip to Baltimore as he won three stakes, highlighted by wins in the Grade 3 Allaire DuPont Distaff with Terra Promessa and the Grade 3 Miss Preakness with Vertical Oak. Ortiz totaled the second most wins in North America with 9 and added 3 seconds and 6 third-place finishes. Luis Quiñones had a great week at Mountaineer as he won 35% and came in the money on an impressive 76% of his mounts. Quiñones led North America in wins with 12 and added 8 seconds and 6 third-place finishes. In a rare unanimous vote, Preakness winning jockey Javier Castellano was awarded Jockey of the Week honors. Castellano won 4 stakes in 2 days, including the Hilltop with Happy Mesa, the Very One with Everything Lovely, the Grade 3 Pimlico Special with Shaman Ghost, and of course the Preakness aboard Cloud Computing. Castellano finished the week with 7 wins, 6 seconds, and 4 third place finishes from 29 mounts. John Parada's newest book, Half a Chance, is available now at JockeyTalk360.com and for Kindle at Amazon.com. Half a Chance is the story of a down-on-his-luck jockey agent who finds himself entangled in a web of deceit and larceny and provides the kind of entertaining read that is ideal for any racing fan. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 Weekly Update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at JockeyTalk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
And it is Always Dreaming in front. Always Dreaming with Battle of Midway a length and a half behind as they come into the final furlong. Looking at Lee is making a bid now through on the inside up into second. Always Dreaming with a 2.5 length lead of 16th to go. Looking at Lee is second. Then comes Battle of Midway, Classic Empire. They're coming to the line and the dream comes true. Always Dreaming has won the Kentucky Derby. It was Looking at Lee second, followed by Battle of Midway and Classic Empire. The final time was 2 minutes 3.59 seconds.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by exercise rider Nick Bush. Nick, welcome back to the show here. And we just heard, of course, the replay of Always Dreaming winning the Kentucky Derby, and I would like to ask you, when he crossed the wire in front, what was your reaction?
I wish I could show you the picture, because on Twitter they got him jumping up and down on his stretch run from the 16th pole to the wire. You can see me on the track. If you YouTube the race, you can see me on the track. It looks like there's a horse on the outside rail jumping up and down, because it looks like I'm a part of the field, but I'm way on the outside just jumping up and down, running with him. It was amazing. You know, when I saw him at the top of this track, all throughout the race, he was like right there, sitting second. And all of a sudden, at the top of the stretch, I saw him kick on. And after watching him work and everything, I knew he had something left in the tank. It was just like, oh my God. He was like, I was jumping up and down, and it was like, people thought I was crazy, I'm pretty sure. It looked like the spirit hit me or something. I was cheering, and it was like, you know, you're jumping up and down because you're watching your dream come true. It's just, it was probably the best feeling ever.
Well, like you said, that's something you had dreamed about as a little kid. You mentioned during the first half of the show, you grew up here in Kentucky, and it was in your blood. Your entire family had been a part of the thoroughbred industry. And, you know, you gave us the rundown, like I said, the first half of the show. You started at the training center at Paris Pike here in Lexington, same place I started, by the way, and went on to work for the likes of Nick Zito, Seth Benzel, Patrick Biancone. And it all brought you here, and you said it best a few minutes ago. It's not something that happens overnight. It's years and years of hard work and getting up early and injuries and traveling, and it's not an easy job, but I think it's safe to assume that you love what you do, Nick.
Yes, you know, I love what I do. It's basically, you know, I mean, you know, some people are basketball players, some people are football players, and some people work in offices, and some people, you know, make a lot of good money, and they're not happy, you know, at what they do. They got to get up. I hear a lot of people complain, but this working with horses is like, you know, it's something that I love. It's something that I enjoy waking up to every morning, because, you know, I get along with horses better than I get along with, you know, most people. It's, you know, it's just something that's in my blood, you know.
I love it.
It's, you know, it's 7 days a week, You know, you get tired sometimes, but it's one of those jobs that you know you enjoy because you're a part of it. You basically because of the horse. And the results you get out of it, you know, is watching your horses go out there and the reward is, you know, watching your horses go out there and run in the afternoon to watch them win is, you know, it's that's the reward you're looking for and that's the result. And, you know, to have it happen in the Kentucky Derby was just, oh my God, you know, it just made my love for the sport even more because, you know, it goes to show you, that it can happen, you know. If you dream big, then, you know, your dreams can come true, you know. It's something that I love. It's great, yeah.
And you mentioned you first started getting on horses when you were, what, 12, 13?
Yeah, 12. I remember my dad first put me on the first pony when I was like 7, you know, and I'd go to fairs and do those little rides around. Yeah, but I think the first horse I got on when I was like 12, 13 on the farm, Parish Hill Farm in Kentucky, not knowing what I was doing, just putting saddle on a horse, and the horse was broke, old, extra tired horse, you know. A little stubborn, but it went off with me a few times. But yeah, that and, you know, getting on him and basically, you know, I didn't have anybody show me because my dad, he would tell me basically how to stop, how to steer, how to kick one in the side or nudge it on to make it go. But they really couldn't show me how to ride because they were grooms, you know. And, you know, and it was just basically something a lot of it was taught to myself. And I got polished off on through the years by, you know, experienced riders and experience.
Well, and to emphasize the dedication that it requires to do what you do, how long would you say it took? How many years did it take for you to get really, really comfortable on the back of a horse to gallop some of these nice, tough horses? How many years would you say that took you?
I say it took a good 5-6 years. I mean, because maybe the first couple years, you know, you feel good, you feel confident. And, you know, you can get up there and you can ride. But the experience of year after year the experience after, I'd say, 5 or 6 years, it's a whole nother level because you're more experienced, you know how to ride, you know, it's different. Riding's not easy at all. Some people think that riding a horse is easy. But going out there and having to try to stay out of a horse's mouth or to get a horse around there that's tough or ride one that likes to dog, ride one that likes to wheel or have a clock or it's just so much in the riding, you know, it takes experience. It's just not an overnight success, you know. It's 7 days a week. It's falling off, getting the back up, getting ran off with, being able to hold one. It's a whole different ball game, you know, than just going out there and riding horse for a trail ride. It took me probably about 6 or 7 years to get started, I'd say. Yep. Until 6 years or 7 years to get really, really comfortable and to where I felt like that, you know, my riding is to where I get along with the, you know, majority of the horses, you know.
It's not
it took me to figure that out, you know.
It's not an easy job. And then you have injuries to throw it into the mix, you know, the waking up early and learning how to get along with all of these different types of horses, fillies, colts, strong, crazy, you know, all kinds of different horses. And then you throw in injuries in there, Nick, and that makes the job even more difficult. Have you ever suffered any really serious injuries?
Yes, I sure have. As a matter of fact, I was lucky up until last year. I had my little minor cuts and bruises or fall off and sore collarbone, sore ankle or whatever from falling off. I had a concussion, but nothing serious. You know, I got right back up. But last year, this time in Saratoga, in July last year, I was breezing a horse out of the gate. Very nice horse, fast horse. And he broke his shoulder almost at the end of the work. And we were we were going full speed, you know, and a horse breaks his shoulder, you know, it's hard for him to not go down. And he went down, and I broke two vertebrae, because what happened was the horse went down, and I went down. I was out. I guess I was out cold. What I can remember is just waking up and Scott Blasi pulling the horse off me and Steve Asmussen holding me there until my boss got there. And I broke my T7 and my T8. And it sets you back. Injury sets you back big time, and fitness-wise and financial-wise. And, you know, as you're coming up as a rider, it's going to put you back, because you learn something new every day on a horse. Or you learn something new in life, basically, I'm going to say. So that minor setback put me back 4 months. And, you know, it takes a lot out of you. And, it's something that happens, you know, with a rider, you know, especially when you're going full speed like that and you got a horse go down with you. It's really nothing you can do. So, you know, you just wonder, like, thank God I'm walking, because I could have been, you know, had a broken neck, I could have been, you know, anything could have been bad, you know, anything could have, you know, could have been worse.
Seriously.
I thank God that, you know, that I am walking, because it was that bad, and I was out of it. I've never been hurt like that before. I never had to, like, leave the track in an ambulance. What, 15 years I've been riding up until last year, you know, and it was just so quick, and it happened, man. It put me out for the whole meet of Saratoga. And, you know, it puts you back, and, you know, like I said, physically, financially, you know, and some people let them get to them mentally, but it didn't get to me, because I think what happens is I did not remember going down, so I never had no fear of getting back on a horse. I've never, you know, I don't remember what happened. It happened so quick. So that's another thing. That's another the danger in riding. You know, like, you go down, and, you know, it's like, you go down, and, you know, it's bad.
It's gonna,
you know,
happen. It's not if, it's when.
Yeah, it's like you go down in like so quick of a second, and you're out for forever. You know, it's a tough job. It's a very tough job.
And, yeah. And like you said, sometimes it can get to you mentally. I was also fortunate in the fact that all of my spills and injuries, I don't remember any of them, so it does help.
I mean, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
If you do, you would always think about that,
right,
as a rider. Not that you're scared, but, you know, because it didn't happen, and you know it's there, and it could happen. And so, like, I'm glad it did not, and I did not remember it, so that I don't, you know, I won't go out there with that fear of, you know. You know, because a horse is still like, they can feel you when you.
Oh, they know.
They
know
if you're scared. Right?
Yes. They know. You don't want to let them know that. No. You need to be out there and confident on the back of a horse so they feel that, not fear. Because they are so intuitive and very sensitive animals. And Nick, so you've gone through the injuries and, you know, you paid your dues. You've been doing this quite a long time, and this job has also taken you to so many cool places. You have done so much traveling with this job. You mentioned during the first half of the show there can be downsides to that. You don't get to see your family a lot. You work 7 days a week, and there are downsides to that lifestyle. But at the same time, if you enjoy traveling and you enjoy seeing all these new and cool, exciting places, it's an awesome, awesome thing. Tell us some of the cool places you've traveled to around the world.
Oh, yeah. I'm working for Todd. You know, he runs the horses all over the country, all over the world, basically. And working for him, I've been able to go from, you know, coast to coast, from here to California, to New Mexico. Haven't been able to go to New Orleans yet, but I've been to New York, Maryland, Florida, I'm from Kentucky, but I've been to, like, tracks, Kentucky, you know, been to, you know, ride to ride some of the Kentucky Derby horses, you know. And then I got to go to Dubai, you know, I got to go to Dubai the last 3 years in a row. These are some places, you know, Dubai, New Mexico, California, these are some places that I've earned, and even New York. I probably would never, you know, would ever went if I never probably got into working for Todd, you know. I don't think, you know, or they might have been, but they wasn't on the bucket list. And I'm glad I did it, because traveling around, you get to see different things, you get to see different culture. And I think traveling is good for everybody, and you get to just see, you know, you're not one minded about things. And I think traveling is really good, and which I've been blessed to just, you know, I've been sent to going to Dubai the last 3 years in a row, the first 2 years with MC Wish, and the last year with the three Master Plan, Keen Ice, and Neolithic. It's just, you know, I got to see that, and to go over there in that beautiful country, you know, it's amazing. You know, get to try everybody's different culture. I'm a big fan of food, so it's like I like to, you know, to try, you know, like different food places. Like, I've been blessed to, you know, go to some good places, you know, and like Maryland with the crab cakes and all the soft shell crabs. It's amazing. It's
good thing you're not a jock, Nick. Good thing.
I know. I mean, that's probably it's a good thing. Everything happens for a reason, right?
This is true.
I'd have been in trouble if I was a jock.
You would. Tell me about Dubai, though. I have never been to Dubai, and it fascinates me.
Dubai is great. A very clean place. It's a very neat place. It's amazing. I think, you know, it's a good experience. If you get the chance to go, you should definitely go. It's a very, different culture-wise, you know. I've met up a lot of people from a lot of the world over there, you know. There's people from everywhere in Dubai. Dubai is great. It's Sheikh Mohammed did a really good job with that place because it's amazing, beautiful, it's fun, there's something to do. I mean, you can go from jumping out of planes to driving race cars, riding camels, to just everything, mm-hmm. anything you can think of. You can go skiing in the mall, the Dubai Mall, and it's just unbelievable. It's every store you can think of. It's so big. It's just, you know, they got an underground aquarium over there. It's just everything. It's a great place.
So much to do.
The races are nice. Yeah, it's great.
and racing is just so huge there. That had to be great to be a part of that. Getting on these horses in the morning over there and seeing. I'm assuming, you know, there was always a big turnout when you're getting on these nice race horses, preparing for some really big races. That had to bring.
Oh yeah, it's amazing when you're going over there with the horses, the likes of like MC Wish and, you know, Master Plan and Neolithic and even Team Ice. A lot of people come up and see it in the morning and everything. It's amazing, you know, and to being able to say that and to the horse, like, basically, I'm glad it's like, I was a kid, always dreamed about this, and just loving horses, and the horses have taken me all these places, and taken me all over the world, and took me to see that, and just took me to Dubai, and it's amazing. You know, I think the horses like it over there, too. They like, it's a long way to the track, so they get to, like, have a little trail ride, a long way back, and I don't know. It's different from a lot of them relax over there too. You know, it's a relaxing place, I'd say.
Nick Bush is joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Nick, I gotta ask you the question that everyone is wondering right now. Always dreaming in the Preakness. What? Yeah. What do you think happened? Did he not take to that track surface? You know, it was kind of a weird surface. It was muddy. It was drying out. And it was then labeled fast. Was he training good in the morning prior to the Preakness? Or what do you think happened that day?
He was training lights out. You know, right now we have no excuses for him, but I'm sure it was something. I mean, he could have bounced. You know, but after I ain't thinking if he bounced, you know, he probably would have been up a little closer, but he stopped at the 3/8 pole and kind of like dropped out of it, which kind of threw me for a loop, and I was just like, what happened? And, you know, I mean, he did run a 5 on the sheets in the Florida Derby, then he ran a 4 on the sheets in the Kentucky Derby. He ran hard from gate to wire in the Kentucky Derby. So, you know, it's shocking to me. You know, I don't know. So I wanted to, you know, we kind of like the next morning we all kind of shipped out of there, and I haven't been able to talk to Todd about what happened or nothing. Did anything happen to him? But I think he's okay. But I just don't understand it, because the horse was just coming. He was just training so strong into that race. It just, there makes no excuse for that. I don't know why he wouldn't show up. You know, like, I mean, I maybe he was just tired, but he didn't feel it in the morning. It was just, you know, I mean, you know, it threw everybody for a loop. It threw me for a loop. I was like, you know, at least it seemed like he would try a little harder, but he didn't. You know, I mean, something's got to be there. I'm, you know, hopefully they can think he's going to the farm for a little break, and maybe they can, you know, give us a diagnosis or see what happened to him, if he was, you know, just, you know, just if he was just tired. But for him to be training like he did, you know, I know you guys, I mean, a lot of, there's videos of him on the drone and stuff like that. This horse was pulling me around there, and I mean, you know, feeling good, down bucking and everything. I don't know if Classic Empire, with the pressure to the outside, because we knew they were going to push us. We knew that going into the race, they were going to push us. I don't know if Johnny could actually say rein him back and took Brian from off the pace to where he didn't have to go with Classic Empire, but the way the race set up was we both went. And I was just like, the first quarter was 23. I thought that was okay. Then the next was 46, and I don't know why. Jimmy just looked like he just was he just wasn't even focused, you know. So
yeah,
I think that something was bothering him there. I mean, I don't know what it was, because if you guys watched those videos, he would train up to like he did in the Derby. It was like wow. I mean, it just caught me for, you know. And I'm just like, you know, when I was after the race, I kind of like went through the grandstand and went back to the bar. I was just I didn't know what to say. People were asking me, and I was just like, I felt like I let everybody down, because we don't have any more of a Triple Crown winner or whatever. But it was just
the way the game is sometimes, Nick. Yeah. It can be very frustrating when everything seems to be going right, and then, you know, no excuse. You don't really know why some of these things happen.
It's a humbling game sometimes.
Yes.
And one day you can be at the highest of the highs, and the next day you can be at the lowest of the lows. And, you know, I mean, I didn't let it get to me like that, because I just want the best for the horse, because we did win the Derby. But I want to know what happened to him, too, in the previous, you know. So hopefully we can find a diagnosis for him and do.
Hopefully we all find out soon. Hopefully he'll be fine and come back strong. Do you think the Belmont is out of the question?
The Belmont is out of the question. I think they're going to try to take him to the farm and give him some time off and bring him back to Saratoga, yeah.
Okay, so we'll have to be patient to see the return.
Be patient, keep an eye out on.
Yeah.
Yep.
To see the return of Always Dreaming, Nick. Tell us about some other really nice horses you're getting on right now for Todd. Anyone we should keep an eye out for in the future?
Well, as of right now, I just got the Saratoga, so we got some really good babies. You know, we have. I like a horse by the name of Cold Army Mule. A friend of mine gets on. I've been watching him. You guys should definitely keep an eye out for him. He should be a superstar, hopefully. And right now we're just playing ear by ear. We got a lot of babies up here, so I'm pretty sure something will pop up.
And they always do for Todd. And what is it like, and I know because I've been there, done that, but tell the audience here what it's like working for Todd Pletcher. He comes across, I guess, kind of, doesn't really show a lot of emotion, but in the mornings he's kind of a different person. So tell the audience briefly. We only have a few minutes left, actually, but tell us briefly what it's like working for Todd.
Working for Todd is great. You know, he's pretty professional about things, and you know, you can watch him, and you know, and you see how he deals with situations, and you know, he's a professional about everything. But Todd's cool. Todd's a good guy. He's a funny guy. He does look kind of standoffish, and like he's serious all the time. But if you go up to him and talk to him, he'll talk to you basically about anything. He's cool, you know. He's funny. He'll crack a joke every now and again. He's a, it's just a great job, you know. It's so good working for him, you know.
And Nick, sounds like you guys have a great relationship as far as you can be honest and upfront with each other. You tell him, hey, this horse didn't work good today. And that's so important. That way it's so important for Todd to know exactly what he's dealing with. And sounds like you guys have a great relationship as far as that goes.
Yeah, you know, I try to keep everything on a professional level, and I talk to him like a brother also, you know. And if the horse doesn't go well, I'll tell him, you know, so we can try to figure him out and try to do the best we can by the horse, you know. And, he's a cool guy. He'll listen to you, and, sometimes he'll ask you questions, what do you think, and this, that, and the other. He's cool.
He's cool. So, Nick, we only have 2 minutes left here. Tell me what is ahead for Nick Bush. You have any goals, plans for the future as far as just continuing to get on some really nice horses for Todd Pletcher? Do you ever plan on training on your own? What's ahead for you?
Eventually, I know you can't ride forever or whatever, or don't really want to ride forever, but I love it right now, and while I'm at the peak of my game, I think I'm going to stick with it for a few more years, but eventually maybe an assistant trainer for Todd, or maybe a blacksmith, I was thinking, or maybe a manager of a farm up in Kentucky or something when I want to settle down, a little closer to home or something of that nature. We'll see. Maybe I can hit the lottery and become an owner, right, or something like that. Right now, just, keep working hard and keep going forward, keep moving forward and keep, taking it day by day and trying to have success and, trying to be the best I can be, I would say.
Anything is possible, Nick. Your future is certainly bright and sounds like, yeah, you want to keep getting on these beautiful animals in the morning. Eventually it is, it wears on your body, I'm sure. So you mentioned blacksmith or, a manager of a farm. But like I said, Nick, you have such a bright future in front of you. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Anytime, Christina. Thank you for having me.
We'll have to catch up here soon. Folks, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. While you're there, check out all of the other great shows you can listen to. Don't forget, join me and the Big A, Anthony Stabile, tomorrow at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. And then join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.